You're listening to The Leonard LoPage Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Bernard Madoff is expected to plead guilty tomorrow for having operated the largest Ponzi scheme in Wall Street history. Many of the investors hurt in what is now estimated to be a $65 billion scam were co-workers, his closest friends, and even members of his family. In an article called Madoff's World in this month's Vanity Fair, Mark Seal reveals some of the stories behind Mr. Madoff's most intimate betrayals. Mark Seal joins me now, along with Don McBride, an investor who gave her savings over to Madoff, and she is speaking to us from her home in Boca Raton, Florida. Welcome, both of you, to the show. Hi.
Hi. Thank you, Leonard.
Mark, you write that before you began the article, you had been trying for months to invest with Mr. Madoff, but that those attempts had not been successful. What prevented you from being able to invest with him?
Well, I'm sure I didn't have enough money to invest, of
course. So you're just two small potatoes?
Exactly, of course. And also, he worked on the power of no. You couldn't get into the fund, and that made you want to get in all the more. But obviously, I was unsuccessful.
Donna, how much money had you invested with Madoff?
About $800,000, which grew to over $1 million. But I was with him through a feeder arm, or what they call a fund-to-fund. And so you could get in with less than $1 million if you went through one of those funds. But, of course, we didn't even know we were getting in with Madoff. It was something, obviously, he had other people working with him on this.
So when did you find out you were with Madoff?
After the fall.
Oh, so all this time you thought you were with a different fund, and you had no idea that Bernard
correct.
Madoff
was
involved?
I was with someone called Beacon Associates, and they then invested about 3/4 of the fund into Madoff themselves.
Had you gotten any of the money back before the roof fell in?
Nothing, no. And I never pulled money out either throughout time. I never pulled out any of the interest. I just continued to put money in.
Had you already retired when you learned about the scandal?
Yes, I had. He got just about every dollar I made in my business that I worked 13 hours, sometimes 18 hours a day on.
Well, Mark's article includes several people who are returning to the workplace because they've lost their nest eggs. Will you have to do that?
Yes, I'm already in the process.
Mark, you begin the article with a story from Carmen Del Orefici.
Exactly.
A former supermodel and one of the investors who was duped by Madoff. How was she convinced to give him all of her money?
Well, she knew Madoff on a personal level, and she knew people who had also invested, and these were respected people, wealthy people, intelligent people, and so she got in that way. And, it was a lot of the people I interviewed were, there were connections like that, friends who knew friends who knew friends, and somehow you would miraculously get in, And so, the landscape is full of these types of stories.
Well, he had headed NASDAQ, and I'm assuming that gave him instant credibility.
Of course. Someone in the story said it's like a herd mentality. You know, when you see people that are richer, smarter, successful, people that seem to know everything about investing, and you see them doing well in something, you want to do it yourself. And so that's the way a lot of this worked, I believe.
And people who knew him often point out that his demeanor was polite, pleasant, inconspicuous.
Right. The manager of his London office said he was Jekyll and Hyde. On one hand, the kind Uncle Bernie who everyone wanted to be with and associate with. And then on the other hand, a man that nobody really seemed to know. So it was a split personality, apparently.
Do you think, as some have suggested, that Madoff is a sociopath?
Well, it's hard for me to say that. That's what people have said. And, so I'm not sure. I think all will be revealed fairly soon, and we'll know a lot more. But he is certainly an intriguing personality either way.
Well, Donna, since you did...
Intriguing to say the least.
Yeah.
I disagree. I don't think he's a sociopath at all. I think he's a very bright, very smart, intelligent man, and he pulled this off with many other people. I personally think that people very high up in the government were also bought off on this. There's no way that he could have done this for the length of time that he did. I mean, still, they haven't asked Frank Pascali anything or put him up in front of a stand. And he was his number one man. He had to have known everything that was going on.
Well, you have to wonder what Bernie Madoff thought was going to happen, because eventually every Ponzi scheme falls apart.
Exactly.
Right. So, something else must have happened. He must have known that eventually it would be exposed. I guess the surprise is that it lasted as long as it did.
Yeah.
Donna, how many people do you know who were personally affected by the fraud?
At least a dozen.
And all through this backdoor thing, or did some of them know Bernie Madoff?
Quite a few of them through the backdoor. The fund that I'm in was recommended by a dear friend who was invested directly with Madoff. His name's Larry Leaf, and he's played quite an advocate for all of the people that have been injured in this. He's speaking out. He's doing whatever he can. He writes the president on a daily basis and has not gotten a response yet.
Now, Mark, I'm assuming most of the people who got in through somebody who knew somebody.
Exactly. Yes, it's a friend of a friend or a friend of the family. I heard stories where, people one gentleman whose father had died went up to see Madoff because his mother kept saying, "You've got to talk to Bernie. You've got to talk to Bernie and get something done." And then Madoff said, "Don't worry, take care of him. He's family, and so it was like a family relationships in some cases, friend relationships in other.
What about his family? His father was Ralph Z. Madoff. What was he like?
Right. It's a bit of a mystery about his father. I got a copy of the marriage certificate of his father and mother, and his father had listed his occupation as credit on it, and so they were involved in the stock business in some way, but it's a little bit cloudy in what way.
His parents were implicated in a scam when they were investigated by the SEC in the 1960s, weren't they?
There's been report. Yeah, there was a report about that, but as to what exactly happened is still a little bit unclear.
Although you do wonder whether this is something that was handed down from generation to generation. Still, the thing that surprises most people is that some very sophisticated people were taken in.
Right.
And some of the biggest investors in his scheme were two older tycoons, Norman F. Levy and Carl J. Shapiro.
Right.
What kind of relationship did they have with Madoff?
Well, this was the most interesting thing to me about the story. He had at least two surrogate fathers. The gentleman you mentioned, they were older, richer men who started him in business who considered him their son. He traveled with them, sat at the family table at the events, the birthday parties, the bar mitzvahs, only to eventually apparently to be taken by him. And in listening to this story, I thought, if a surrogate son could loot the fortune of his father, what would he do to a stranger? So it's a very unique relationship with these two men.
Well, he seemed very attached to them, doted over them.
Right.
And he often lavished his friends and family with gifts.
Yes.
So you suggest that he ruled over them with fear, another example of his split personality?
Exactly. Yes. People told me that people were afraid of him, that he could wield this influence. But at the same time, he had huge parties for his employees at his house on Montauk, where he would rent every hotel room in the area and have these great, I think it was probably, great to be an employee of his, because I think from all instances, he treated them very well.
You write that many investors played the spread in order to invest heavily with Madoff's funds. What do you mean by that?
Oh, that's about, you could refinance your house at one rate and put the money with Madoff at another rate, and you could make the difference between what you refinance the house for and what the returns, the 12 or 14% returns were.
Now, Donna, you suggested earlier that you think that there were many other people involved. So do you blame a whole bunch of other people, or do you think that, as some have argued, that the government has failed in its responsibilities because there were reports that this didn't smell all that good for many years?
Correct. I don't put blame on other people. It's not my job to blame other people. I do blame my government, though, because my government is supposed to be a representation of the people. And I think that with numerous times of him being investigated by the SEC and nothing being uncovered, it's almost like a bad movie. I mean, there had to have been many people getting paid off here along the way, and there was plenty of money to do that with.
Do you think that a lot of people... Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Finish.
I was just going to say it's pretty much what greed creates, doesn't it?
Mark, do you think that there were a lot of people being paid off?
You know, the story that I did, I didn't touch on that, so I'm not sure. I can't answer it, but obviously, you know, I don't know how this could have been done with just one man.
There were people who were suspicious, and it's interesting how accusations of anti-Semitism come into the story. For example, tell us about Laura Goldman.
Well, she was originally in Palm Beach, and she had met Madoff. She's been in quite a bit of media lately. But she was interesting, but she was one of many people I interviewed. I interviewed her by phone, but I went to Palm Beach right about a week after, maybe 2 weeks after everything hit. And I was interviewing victim after victim and opening one door after another where, varying scenes of desperation were behind each door. It was each case seemed to be getting progressively worse. People were crying, screaming, cursing, plotting revenge. You know, I've never seen such an outpouring of anger and a sense of betrayal that they had, you know, and they all shared these stacks of now worthless paper and the belief that they had believed in this man. And it was, so it was quite a scene in Palm Beach right after the December 11th arrest.
But Laura Goldman, who is Jewish, in fact, she's
right.
Israeli, she was accused of being an anti-Semite when she became suspicious of Madoff's operation.
That's right. That's what she said, that she had sent out letters and tried to tell people about it, and they had said, that you were picking on him because of that. So, yes, that was one accusation.
On the other hand, you also write that Jews in Palm Beach, Florida, experienced a wave of anti-Semitism after the Madoff scandal broke.
Exactly.
Is that ironic? Because most of his victims were Jews who were living in Palm Beach and around the country.
Exactly. And the Palm Beach Post, a writer there told me that they had to not print so many of the anti-Semitic emails that were flooding the websites.
But these were obviously not people who had been victims,
right,
but rather just people who saw this as all part of the protocols of the Elders of Zion kind of thing.
Exactly.
My guests are Mark Seal, who has written an article for Vanity Fair called Madoff's World, and also Donna McBride, an investor who gave her savings over to Madoff without knowing she was giving it to Madoff. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. Later on in the show, we'll take a look at Joe Kennedy's years in Hollywood. Plus, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, our gurus of how-to, will answer your questions on home repair later in the show. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
WNYC receives support from Barnes & Noble, located at 1972 Broadway at 66th Street, presenting Stephen Brower, author of Satchmo, The Wonderful World and Art of Louis Armstrong, with Stanley Crouch and Phoebe Jacobs for a conversation on March 17th at 7:30 p.m. More at 212-595-6859. Freelancers Union, a 100,000-member nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting independent workers and making freelance fair. Information online at freelancersunion.org. Picador, publisher of Richard Price's Lush Life, a tale of two Lower East Sides and a crime that ripples through every layer of the city. A kaleidoscopic portrait of the new New York. Lush Life, now in paperback.
WNYC, where New Yorkers come to help each other understand the economy.
I think the biggest challenge in this economy for everybody is to sit down and say, that job is gone. I am still a fabulous person. I have wonderful skills. I have energy. Go do something else for a little while. You don't have to do it for the rest of your life.
Uncommon economic coverage every day on WNYC and at WNYC.org/economy.
Oh,
we're back with Mark Seal, whose article in the current issue of Vanity Fair is called Madoff's World. Also with us is Donna McBride, an investor who gave her savings over to Bernard Madoff unwittingly, not knowing that it was to Bernard Madoff, although that really probably didn't matter to you, Donna, did it? You were just getting nice returns?
That is correct. And I believe the people that had recommended him, they were reasonable investors. I work for very elite clientele. A lot of my clients were also with Madoff. And I thought if they were smart enough to invest, then this would be a good thing, that whatever was recommended to me. But I didn't investigate that it was actually Madoff that this was with.
And you say that you initially invested under $1 million. How much did you think you had before the roof caved in?
Just over $1 million.
Mm.
So, I'd only been with him for 4 years.
Now, Mark, in a letter to Newsweek, Rabbi Moshe Shiner of the Palm Beach Synagogue wrote that Madoff's actions were an affinity theft. What do you think that means?
It's when the thief preys on his own people, and you feel like you can trust your own, and that's what affinity theft is, and that's apparently one way that he worked.
Mm-hmm. And people are shocked at some of the people caught up in that affinity group, Elie Wiesel, for example, but also Kevin Bacon.
Right. Yeah, that doesn't, you know, it just shows you the reach of this thing. It's unbelievable that it spreads so far and its tentacles reach so far into so many places around the world. I mean, it goes even beyond affinity theft. It goes into so many different countries, so many different groups, so many different charities. It's mind-boggling, the scope of this thing.
And many of those charities, many of them Jewish charities, have suffered a major hit.
Exactly.
We'll find it hard to recover.
And many of them closed their doors on December 11th, and the good that they did was just vaporized, and just like the money that so many people lost, it was just gone.
Now, Donna said the way she described it, she didn't get that huge a return on her investment, although, of course, it was all just invention anyway. But a caller wants to know how much return investors did get on their money before the fraud went public.
Well, I had heard some years it was as high as 40%.
What happens?
I've heard that it's only been as high as 15% with people that were directly invested with him. There
right.
was only a year or two where it stretched to 20%.
For 20. Yeah, someone told me that it was higher, but, you know, I don't know. You get these varying reports now.
In fact, all the numbers seem to be rather hazy.
I think the steady amount was, Don, I think you know better than I, was 12 to around 12%, right?
Around 12%. That is correct. Yes.
Right.
Which is still a very nice return on an investment.
Exactly. Year in and year out. It's unbelievable.
Especially with what banks are offering these days. Isn't there, I read somewhere, a possibility that people who took profits out of the fund before the Ponzi scheme fell through may have to return them?
Yeah, that's the dreaded word, clawback. And it remains to be seen how many people will be affected by that. But that you could have to return, you might have to return what you've taken out.
Which is very sad, because actually the government's only allowing, as of now, 3 years back taxes, because you have to understand these people were paying taxes on fictitious money. But they diligently paid their taxes every year, and now they're only allowed to go back and claim that action for the last 3 years, not for many, many years that they were in doing it.
What happens to you, Donna? Does the IRS get involved in this with you?
Absolutely. I will go back and try to claim for the past 3 years, but it's I'm one of the little guys, and there was so many of us because of these feeder arms, which is why I say there had to be more people involved. There was people out there shopping for feeder arms, shopping to bring in more money for Bernie. There had to have been. And that's why I think he's a really smart guy. I think that he probably did not think this was going to fail. He might have thought he could continue doing this. Had the market not dipped like it did, he probably could have gone on for years. He'd been doing it for almost 20-some years already.
Well, the question is whether those people who were conducting the feeder arms knew what was really going on.
That is the question that we really don't know.
They may very well have thought that they were doing their friends favors.
Might have.
What about Ruth Madoff, Bernard Madoff's wife? Mark, she'd been actively involved in the business. She had an office next to her husband's, almost always traveled with him, and began withdrawing millions of dollars from their account shortly before he was arrested. To what extent do you think that she played a part in the fraud? I know she's getting her own lawyer, so I guess the strategy is to separate herself from him.
I think so. Obviously, they were very close. They were together since they were kids in Laurelton, Queens, where they both grew up, very close to each other. Ruth's father was a successful accountant, and it seems that early on that he was talking up Bernie for potential investors on a very casual basis. So I think that's going to be very interesting to see the real relationship between the two of them.
And then there is the matter of Shannon Madoff, who was his niece. She's married to a former SEC lawyer, Eric Swanson.
Exactly.
Do you think that they exploited that connection? Is there any indication of that?
No, there's not. So that's another question. But as of now, no.
Let me ask some of the questions that my listeners have been writing in. One wants to know if Madoff's family will be able to keep any of the money.
Well, that's a good question because who knows? That remains to be seen. I'm not sure exactly what's going to happen there.
I think you can see it evident in the fact that he's throwing in the towel mm-hmm. right now, and he's throwing in the towel with the hopes that his wife can keep the house and keep some money. Absolutely. That's his tactic now. But whether that will come true or not, we don't know.
The U.S. agency that insures corporate pensions, the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, took responsibility for about $2 million in pensions owed to former employees of East River Management Corp, a building service provider that lost all of its assets in the Madoff scandal. Mark, do you think that this is an indication that the government will do more to assist some of the people who have been hurt in the scandal?
I think so. I think that's what should happen. I mean, SIPC, which insures investors up to $500,000, should kick in. There's a lot of things the government could do to help these people.
Kim from the East Village left this comment on our show page. She said, I'd like a rundown of the numbers. They don't add up to me. Madoff couldn't have spent $50 billion, and if he didn't invest it, why isn't more just left sitting around in some account? Or I guess you could have said, or under his mattress. Could all of that $50 billion have been paid out to earlier investors?
She's a very smart girl because a lot of us have had the exact same questions. The numbers don't add up. But, you know, his computers were not, all of his personal computers were not frozen down immediately. It's really a shame that that money is probably sitting somewhere, and we may never find it.
So there's a possibility that it's in a Swiss bank account or something like that?
I believe that's truly possible.
Mark, what do you think? I'm sure you've spoken to a number of the people involved who have theories.
Sure. Everybody has a theory on where the money went, right? A lot of people say it was paid out to investors over the years. You know, they put money in and they had to give money out because from all indications, when you wanted your money out of the fund, he would write you a check right away. At least that's from the people I interviewed. So whether it's some of the money sitting in a bank somewhere, or maybe it was just paid off over the years, both are viable questions.
My guests are Mark Seal, whose article Madoff's World is in the current issue of Vanity Fair. Also talking with Donna McBride, an investor who gave her savings over to Madoff. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Before Madoff was arrested, he sent out $200 to $300 million to certain employees and friends. I'm assuming that the government thinks that money can be recovered.
Are you talking about the money that was that was distributed or the checks they found in the desk?
I'm not exactly sure. Tell me about both.
Well, I understand that they found checks in his desk, and they had not been sent out. I may be wrong on that. So I'm not sure exactly what was distributed before his arrest. But I remember in the newspapers right after, the week after, it was full of this, these potential checks that had been written but hadn't been sent yet.
Well, if some money is recovered, I guess a few hundred million dollars, obviously not the $50 billion, what hope do you have, Donna, that you'll see any of it returned to you?
Right now I don't have a whole lot of faith because what I've been watching happen so far, I mean, Bernie Madoff is still in his apartment. He's still living a fairly decent life while other people are living in trailers or living with their friends. I personally am living with a friend right now. There's a lot of small people that got crushed here and a lot of large people that did as well. The general public seems to think, oh, all these rich guys went down, but they can afford to, and it's really not the truth. It's not all these rich guys. There was many of us like myself, life savings, and it's gone. So my faith right now is low. I guess I'll just have to wait and see what they decide to do. If the government does step in and help us, that's the big question. It steps in and helps the automobile industry when it doesn't know how to do business very well, and the financial institutes when it doesn't do business very well. And here were a bunch of people that had invested their life savings after doing business very well and paying their taxes and being good citizens.
Mark, I asked Donna earlier if she blamed government at all. What about you? Do you think the SEC bears quite a bit of responsibility here?
Well, you know, the most interesting aspect of the story is Harry Markopoulos, the investigator out of Boston, who warned the SEC on numerous occasions about this. And it just seems like there was not enough follow-up. So
he went so far as to write a 19-page memo called "The World's Largest Hedge Fund is a Fraud."
Exactly.
Maybe he should be given a job in the new revamped SEC.
I think he's a definite candidate. This guy was really on the trail, and he should have been listened to, and his warning should have been heeded.
Probably just the environment of the time. We don't, this thing seems to be going okay. We shouldn't really intrude into a successful business.
Yeah. I'm not sure the mentality of or what happened, but, this Markopoulos had a lot of – he was right on it.
Well, in his report in 2005, he also wrote, "I found that whenever there's one cockroach in plain sight, many more are lurking behind the corner out of plain view." So I guess he was suggesting that Bernie Madoff was not a unique situation, that we may very well see more scandals like this.
Yes, he's been saying that. He's been in the media quite a bit lately, and I'm sure we'll hear a lot more from him.
But I when I introduced this, I said, this is the worst Ponzi scheme in Wall Street history. Would you be surprised if another one turned up that we were unaware of?
This one's so surprising, I don't think anything would surprise me. What about you, Donna? What do you think?
Nothing would surprise me at this point, but I believe this was so large that it takes the cake.
Do you think that Madoff will ever tell the authorities where the money went? Is this one of the reasons that he'll plead guilty tomorrow, that he doesn't want to do that?
I personally think the guy has such a smirk on his face that answers it all. No, he's not going to say much.
Because he is 70 years old, and he will be given a life sentence. So he can't wait it out and then just come out and find some of that money and live off of it in the future, as some other people who have been involved in economic scandals have.
You would think that he would do something because of his family, but all of us have different morals and different ethics and different ideas of what life's all about. So,
well, he seems to have been perfectly happy to screw his family, so I'm wondering whether he's socking it away to help any of them.
Yeah, the interesting thing is his sister was invested. She's in Palm Beach, in the Palm Beach area, and she apparently was fully invested in the fund as well. So you're right about the family.
We have to take a we thank you very much for talking with us. Mark Seal, whose article Madoff's World is in the current issue of Vanity Fair. Donna McBride, an investor who lost her savings to Bernard Madoff. Donna, I'm so sorry about that. I hope that you do get some of that money back.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to give our side of the story as well.